Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, July 13th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Melody, and happy National Barbershop Music Appreciation Day.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
How about that? July 13th celebrates a cappella style of music and commemorates the anniversary of one of its musical societies, the Barbershop Quartet. Aldous Huxley himself once said, "There is no bad day that can't be overcome by listening to a barbershop quartet. This is just truth, plain and simple." So, Melody, in honor of musical foursomes everywhere, and to celebrate another special day, Todd and I present the following.
Happy birthday, a great big to-do. Let's celebrate, yeah, celebrate you. So make a wish on your special day. You're looking great,
so great.
Come celebrate. Happy birthday from us to you.
From the place.
Yes, from the place where dreams do come true. So here's a wish, 1, 2, 3, 4 part harmony. Happy birthday, your special day.
To you.
Yes, to you.
Happy 39, partner.
What a very nice tune. Thank you. I'm speechless.
Our pleasure.
I'm speechless. Well, thank you, Dave, and thank you, Todd.
Our pleasure.
And I was expecting the Three Stooges. I got two.
Hey.
Just kidding.
You got to start somewhere.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And so gold kind of celebrated a little bit today when we first opened up. It was up pretty nice today, but we're still holding at about 1961. It's funny if it would have been in 1954 at the gold price. Mm. What year would it have to be if it was 39? Oh, I don't know. But anyway, gold today is 1961. Silver is 2490, almost 25 bucks. How fast it moves. It was ready to break 23, and now we're ready to break 25, up almost 3%. Platinum was up $23 at 984, and palladium was up 6 at 1,326. The USDX today was down 0.79, 99.75, folks. There she goes. Where she stops, nobody knows. Crude oil was up a buck and a half at 77.31. Paper markets today, you have the Dow up 47 points. S&P is up 37. And, of course, the NASDAQ was up almost, a little over 1.5%. These are the highest levels in this year, up 219 points. And it's pretty much all based on the upbeat inflation data. Woo-hoo! I wonder when you're going to start having the good news. And the PPI wrote... The PPI price index for June had a smaller than expected increase. This all came out with the Labor Department today. And the PPI for final demand rose 0.1%. Economists were expecting a slightly higher rise of 0.2%. Core PPI rose 0.1% when excluding food and energy. Gee whiz. Let's get rid of that stuff that we need, that we live, that we pay for. The producer, it's all based on used cars. How many of those are you out there buying today and living on? Or maybe living in? I don't know. The producer report comes a day after the consumer price index showed a smaller than expected increase. The CPI rose just 3% year over year. This is the lowest since March of 2021. And, of course, it was all good news because now everyone thinks that the Federal Reserve will be near the end of its rate hiking cycle. The wholesale producer numbers, which are seen as a harbinger of consumer price increases, that's declined faster than the consumer inflation data. In May, the headline PPI number actually declined 0.4%. And it was unchanged when they excluded food and energy. But so we'll have to see where this goes. But for the most analysts out there, they don't think it's going to change much, Dave.
Well, consider this. Prices are still rising, just at a slower pace than it has been.
Right.
And June's price gains were just smaller than analysts had expected. But look, there's still inflation. With fiat currency, there always is, right? Prices are just rising at a more moderate pace compared to the last couple of years. But they're still likely higher. That is, inflation is higher than what's being reported by the government. And that's been like that for decades now since it's changed its methodologies for how they calculate it. Now, remember last June when average gasoline prices here hit the never-before-seen $5 a gallon? Well, nationwide today, they're about 30% lower, now at about $3.50. Yet most Americans, virtually all, I'd say, are still under a lot of price pressure for key costs of living. Most notably, housing affordability is hitting some of the lowest levels ever as a lack of supply keeps home prices out of reach for far too many. Inflation and shelter costs, by the way, inched lower in June as well, but still rose at a painful eye-opening 7.8% annual rate.
You know, nationwide, the gasoline is maybe 30% lower now. However, it's still what? 70-80% higher than it was when we were able to produce our own oil. So it's still way above than what we were paying. And that's how they capture, and that's how they get and manipulate folks. You know, people see, you know, hey, things are lower, it's going great, blah, 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 blah. Well, let's go back to that first. They'll do it with the food. They'll do it with everything. Is, you know, we're never going back to the prices where we were back in 2019. And the example we gave yesterday is when your purchasing power declines, it doesn't come back. It just doesn't come back. And so that's something to keep in mind. Dollars, we talked about, I mentioned the dollar, how it's sliding to a 15-month low. And this happened again following the, well, remember it was 114. Now we're breaking 100. The last time the USD.
Hey, sounds
lower,
like someone's golf game.
Yeah. Unfortunately, not mine. The last time the US dollar index was lower was 100 was in April of 2022. And the dollar has defined predictions of prolonged slump since at least the beginning of the year. We all know it's on borrowed time. Many money managers also confirm that they believe it's on borrowed time, as we can see interest rates near a peak. And we've seen these aggressive, the Fed's aggressive tightening is beginning to take a toll on the world's largest economy and around the world, because you also have other countries that are also still tightening in their economy. So it's just not here. And so now we ask, we were wondering how high will she go. Now we're going to have to wonder how low will it go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and if you look at the foreign exchange market, I mean, there's this one guy, public in, fixed income at M&G Investments, Jim Leavis, says there are lots of currency opportunities out there at the moment. Quite a few of the emerging market currencies, he says, look cheap. So it'll be interesting to see where the dollar goes in the coming weeks. Response to the latest inflation figures. Of course, the politicians are all over the map, using it to their advantage on both sides of the aisle. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren called on the Fed to halt interest rate increases. In an interview on Bloomberg TV yesterday, she said, take yes for an answer, Chair Powell, and let's stop with the rate increases. You may recall that during his renomination hearings two years ago, she famously called Powell a dangerous man to be running the Fed. So, hey, it's another day, Melody, another drama.
Yes, it is. And, you know, Janet Yellen is probably just as dangerous as Jerome Powell. But, you know, and they have been for how many years do we go back? Many, many years. They've all been dangerous for this nation. This is why we are where we are. And, you know, and it's funny. I mean, the reason they come out with all these positive notes and spins on everything is because, yeah, they need to have good vibes from everyone, especially small businesses. And, you know, so you have small business owners that, hey, they're still pretty pessimistic, but it's improving. The vibes have seemed to have stopped getting worse. The NFIB Small Business Optimism Index, this was actually out yesterday, ticked up in June to the highest level so far this year. Small businesses often feel an economic slowdown more quickly or sharply than large corporations. They have less scale, less margin for error, and less access to capital markets. And things have been pretty tough out there lately. And so maybe they're getting a little bit of a reprieve, but small business leaders seem to be more pessimistic than the index's historical average of 98 going back 49 years. And so might be a little green, some green shoots out there, Dave?
Well, apparently so. I mean, according to the survey, the share of companies planning for capital expenditures in the next 3 to 6 months. Went up to 25% in May, held steady there in June. That's up from 21% at the beginning of the year, dipped down to 19 after the bank failures in March. An increase in spending plans is not what you expect to see in an economy on the verge of a recession. But life does go on. Meanwhile, the share of owners expecting better business conditions in the next 6 months improved by 10 points in June to the best reading since February last year. Still, more owners are negative than positive. As we discussed on Tuesday's program, American households are becoming a tad more upbeat on their inflation expectations over the next couple of years.
Okay. America's faith in public institutions of all kinds is dwindling to historic lows. This is a new Gallup report, but confidence in small business retain relatively high. Yeah, we want those little mom-and-pop shops to succeed. Yeah, we do. Small businesses make a remarkable comeback after being clobbered in the early days of the pandemic. I think most of those, I don't know. Americans seem to be losing faith in big companies. They continue to trust the smaller ones. Small businesses, which employ nearly half of U.S. workers, have long been the backbone of the American economy. And they don't get involved in politics, I guess. You think?
Well, I think more importantly, politicians on both sides of the aisle actually
support, ignore them.
Yeah, this one says support them, but beauty in the eye of the beholder. Listen, we want to hear about your favorite local business. Send us the name of your business, your favorite business, where it is, and one to two sentences about why you love it. Send it to discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. We'll read any comments on a future program.
All right. And I'll guarantee you most of them are going to be businesses, perhaps, where they sell a lot of made in America or make American products.
I'm guessing a lot of listeners are going to be sending in comments about this company called Discount Gold and Silver Trading.
Oh, okay. That's good too. And maybe if you get them sent over to us, maybe you'll receive a free Silver Eagle.
Oh my gosh.
Does that encourage you folks to, and it has to be one per family. You know, we're not going to go crazy and have, you know, 20 emails coming in from, you know, one number and so forth. So, you know, there'll be a little few guidelines on that one, folks. So yeah, we'll work something out. Jobless claims. It's Thursday. The number of Americans applying for jobless benefits, that fell again last week as the labor market continues its slowdown. Applications, initial jobless claims fell by 12,000 to 237,000 for the week ending July 8th. The four-week moving average kind of smooths out some of the week-to-week ups and downs, went to 246,000. Jobless claim applications are seen as a proxy for the number of layoffs in any given week. We still have 1.73 million people collecting unemployment benefits. That ended July 1st. For 3 weeks in late May and early June, jobless claims had appeared to reach a sustained higher level above 260,000, Dave.
Well, you know, even so, that increase may not be enough for Fed officials to move away from what's perceived as, well, it's not a near certainty, but it's certainly over 4 out of 5 futures traders. See the Fed raising its benchmark rate at its next meeting, which ends July 26. That's less than 2 weeks. Americans have enjoyed unusual job security post-pandemic, with companies reluctant to shed staff in this worker-friendly labor environment. Employers continuing to add jobs overall, except perhaps the tech sector, at a healthy pace each month, surprising economists even, and painting a mostly encouraging picture of the labor market. In any event, for the most part, the economy has been stubbornly resilient in the face of the Fed's, I call it, obsessive rate hiking campaign since March last year. And there you have it.
That always sounds like somebody's in pain. All right, I'm in pain because we have to go to a break, but we'll be back. So stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you. Never gonna give you up.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off the rest of the program, celebrating her big 39th birthday. I won't tell you for how many times. Hey, check out our website, dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog, one out tomorrow. Again, that's dgscoins.com. Or call us during working hours, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, want to hear something surprising? It was to me anyway. Mexico has replaced China this year as the U.S.'s top trading partner. Yes, Mexico is number one now. Milestone reflects a real shift in the dynamics of the global economy, away from prioritizing low prices and greater efficiency via super fragile listic expialidocious, super fragile supply chains, to something more nuanced. Dallas Fed economist Luis Torres says that Today's global economic relationships encompass a myriad of concerns, among them national security, climate policy, and supply chain resiliency. While declining trade with China means rising costs for U.S. consumers and companies, it also reflects worsening diplomatic relations between the two countries, which is concerning for reasons that go far beyond just economics. The decline of China as our top trading partner comes after years of worsening U.S.-China relations and reflects Mexico's rise in manufacturing, hastened along by a new push to nearshore or closer to the U.S. The auto industry accounts for nearly a quarter of the total manufacturing trade activity between the U.S. and Mexico. China exports more to the U.S. than the U.S. sends to China, but trade with Mexico is actually more balanced between imports and exports. For example, in some industries, products are started in U.S. plants and finished in Mexican factories before coming back into the U.S. Torres says, yes, we complement each other. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has been pushing to improve relationships with China. Last week, Treasury Secretary Janet "The Data" Yellen met with China's Premier Li Qiang, atop economic aide to President Xi Jinping. Additional visits from other U.S. officials are expected in the coming months. Of course, China emerged as the U.S. Top trading partner courtesy of its entry into the World Trade Organization, but way back in 2001. It surpassed Canada in 2014. But trade with China started declining after the Trump administration imposed restrictive tariffs on Chinese imports in 2018. Of course, China responded with tariffs of their own. They further declined when the pandemic twisted up supply chains all around the globe. Well, the Biden administration has left, I think, virtually all the tariffs in place. Today, the average U.S. tariff on Chinese imports is 19.3%, while China's average tariff on U.S. imports is 21.2%. That's according to the Peterson Institute for International Economics. According to Torres, this is far more than the 9% paid by other WTO members, which have most favored nation status. Mexico and the U.S. trade with far fewer barriers, part of the free trade deal formerly known as NAFTA, renegotiated in 2020 as the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Interesting news. And if you're a paper market investor, stocks, equities, you'll want to listen to this, particularly if you're into aggressive growth and technology companies. NASDAQ, where most of those companies are sold, is rebalancing its widely traded NASDAQ 100 index to offset the growing size of the giant tech companies known as the Magnificent Seven. It's another indication of the top heavy quality of the markets at the moment. NASDAQ announced it would conduct a special rebalance of its NASDAQ 100 prior to trading on July 24th. Now, that will reduce the degree to which NASDAQ 100's performance is determined by this elite club of seven, which are Apple, Microsoft, Google parent Alphabet, Amazon, NVIDIA, Tesla, and Facebook parent Meta. NASDAQ said, as described in the published index methodology, a special rebalance may be conducted to address over-concentration in the index by redistributing the weights. The special rebalance will not result in the removal or addition of any securities. The methodology spells out that when any group of big stocks, you know, all those making up more than 4.5% of the index, amounts to more than 48% of the index, then the index will be rebalanced. While the NASDAQ composite, that's a group of more than 3,000 stocks listed on the NASDAQ exchange, is often cited in the press and in our market reports. It's the NASDAQ 100 That's the basis for the incredibly popular trading products like the Invesco Triple Q ETF. Invesco, in fact, says that its Triple Q is the second most heavily traded ETF in the U.S. after the SPY index, the SPIDER, which tracks the S&P 500. And what I view as good news, the Federal Trade Commission says it will appeal a decision by a U.S. Court to allow Microsoft to acquire gaming giant Activision Blizzard for nearly $70 billion. Now, it's likely the FTC's last chance to block a merger before an injunction barring the deal expires this weekend. Notice that the appeal was filed in a U.S. district court in San Francisco last night. The FTC is going to have to convince the appeals court that the district court erred this week in ruling against it. The court found that the FTC didn't present a strong enough case that the merger would harm consumers by limiting consumer choice. Microsoft won a major victory over the FTC Tuesday when a federal judge denied an injunction request from the FTC to temporarily block the tech giant from acquiring Activision. Spokesperson for Activision Blizzard said the company is confident the U.S. will remain among the 39 countries where the merger can close. Under the Biden administration, the FTC has pushed aggressively to limit big corporate mergers, but it has been largely unsuccessful. The deal between Microsoft and Activision serves as the biggest litmus test yet for the FTC and its power. In Washington, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy facing his first major test since hardline GOP rebels literally ground the House floor to a halt last month in protest of his handling of the debt ceiling negotiations, which actually led to the suspension of the nation's $31.4 trillion debt ceiling. Now, whether McCarthy successfully shepherds the must-pass National Defense Authorization Act through the House will certainly dictate the next phase of his speakership. Up to this point, McCarthy's tenure has been largely dominated by two conflicting dynamics: prediction of his demise at the hands of his extreme rabble-rousers, and an uncanny knack for defying his doubters. McCarthy advised critics not to underestimate him today as a potential crisis brewed over the Defense Authorization Act, telling reporters, "This just seems like another week in Congress. I'll get through it and we'll figure it out as we go." Freedom House Republicans are demanding votes on a range of controversial amendments to the massive defense policy bill, which is passed with bipartisan support every year for the past 60. Many of the amendments take on culture war issues that have become a cornerstone of the GOP agenda these days, including diversity programs and funding for gender affirming care at the Pentagon. One key demand is an amendment to block a Pentagon policy that reimburses service members who travel to get an abortion, a vote that could endanger vulnerable Republicans that McCarthy wants to protect. The House Rules Committee began meeting this afternoon to decide which of the more than 1,500 amendments filed by lawmakers should receive a vote. While the House Armed Services Committee advanced the Authorization Act with broad bipartisan support, several of the proposed floor amendments could cost the bill Democratic votes, potentially imperiling final passage of the bill. Yesterday, McCarthy summoned representatives from every ideological faction of the GOP conference to talk about how to stave off future rebellions. Multiple lawmakers reported that while the defense authorization fight is important, they believe the bigger threat to McCarthy's status as speaker will be in the appropriations process. McCarthy previously had suggested that Congress would pass 12 separate appropriation bills. It's a process demanded by members of its Freedom Caucus, but today hinted he may have to go a different route. Several lawmakers, in the meantime, say they believe a government shutdown in October is on the way. Result of Congress doesn't pass the appropriation bills or a continuing resolution. He said earlier, another day, another drama. Well, this is an eye-opener. A new study says that remote work risks wiping $800 billion from the value of office buildings in major cities, highlighting the potential losses that landlords are facing from post-pandemic changes in employment trends. We know COVID's push to hybrid work has driven the need for office space down, with vacancy rates rising. Well, McKinsey Global Institute said today in a report that modeled the impact on valuations by 2030 in 9 cities around the world. The estimate of $800 billion in valuation losses represents a 26% decline compared to levels in 2019, with the blow at risk of deepening to as much as 42%. McKinsey said the impact on value could be even greater if rising interest rates compounded, adding the bearing could increase if troubled financial institutions decide to move quickly to reduce the price of property they finance or own. McKinsey's model is offering a window on how property owners and lenders are grappling with the changes in where people work in the wake of the pandemic. The shift is also affecting the value of retail and residential real estate as people's new habits influence where they shop and live. And of course, there's a multiplier effect to all this, too. As property values decline, many of these property owners go to court to have their property tax assessments reduced, which in turn reduces tax revenues available to cities, both large and small, to provide services to the public. Office attendance is still 30% lower than what it was before the pandemic, and only 37% of people are back at the office every day. Foot traffic near stores in metropolitan area remains 10 to 20% below pre-pandemic levels as well. Lower office attendance has driven down asking rents in real terms, inflation adjusted, that is. Cities have generally seen sharper drops, with San Francisco seeing declines of 28%, New York City 18%. European centers like Paris, London, and Munich have been more resilient. The trend is set to continue, with more employers downsizing space to reduce costs as soon as long-term leases come to an end. But McKinsey said some tenants have chosen not to wait for their renewal dates and instead have bought their way out of longer-term contracts. Interesting numbers there. And a fresh load of trade data show that the historic series of supply shocks that rattled the global economy for 3 years is subsiding, or in fact has subsided, boosting expectations, among other things, for cooler inflation in the months ahead. HSBC Bank said earlier this week the improvement in global supply chains is resonating through almost every indicator. Delivery times are falling, port congestion is close to normal, product shortages are receding, and global inventory levels are rebalancing. Now, the London-based bank also noted that over the course of the past year, in particular 2023, global supply chains have eased remarkably quickly, removing one of the biggest headaches in terms of activity and inflation. The return to normal case was strengthened yesterday by figures showing the CPI rising just 3% last month from a year ago, the smallest advance in more than 2 years. But look, supply constraints have given way to another problem, weaker demand. Developed countries have seen a 2.5% drop in global trade volumes this year compared with a year ago. And some Asian economies like South Korea and Vietnam have seen their export levels fall by as much as 15% this year. Figures released today show that China's exports have fallen for four of the 6 months so far in 2023. Shipments to the U.S. dropped almost 24%, again, the 11th straight month of declines. In the U.K., a government report shows that the value of goods exports there slumped 4.4%, driven mostly by weaker trade with the EU. Stripping out the impact of inflation, British shipments abroad still fell by over 3%. So lower consumption has enabled companies to reduce their bloated inventories and helped lead to a 90% drop in global shipping costs from their peak levels in 2021. So yes, I am going to take it easy for the next minute or two. I hope you'll do the same in return when Financial Survival continues. It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, baby, don't say baby. I've got to know if your sweet love is going to save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. I'm Dave Allen. Hey, if you missed this earlier this week, Ukraine's President Vladimir Zelensky slamming NATO members' unwillingness to offer Ukraine a timetable for membership is unprecedented and absurd. Now, Zelensky didn't name President Biden directly, but the U.S. and Germany were leading the resistance to any definitive statements at this week's NATO summit that Ukraine will soon be a member. The issue of how to handle Ukraine's future membership has divided the alliance, with countries like Poland and the Baltic states pushing for a much stronger statement. Zelensky tweeted, "Ukraine will be represented at the NATO summit. because it is about respect. But Ukraine also deserves respect. He added, it's unprecedented and absurd when a time frame is not set neither for the invitation nor for Ukraine's membership, while at the same time vague wording about conditions is added even for inviting Ukraine. He continued, it seems there is no readiness neither to invite Ukraine to NATO nor to make it a member of the alliance. This means that a window of opportunity is being left to bargain Ukraine's membership in NATO in negotiations with Russia. And for Russia, this means motivation to continue its terror. Uncertainty is weakness, and I will openly discuss this at the summit. Well, we know Vladimir Putin justified his invasion in part on the idea of Ukraine's NATO ascension would be intolerable to Russia. Some analysts believe he'll try to keep the conflict going in order to prevent it, particularly if Ukraine gets a guarantee of membership after the war. But Zelensky sees NATO membership as an essential guarantee of his country's long-term security, and more than justified by the military prowess and sacrifice that Ukraine has shown through 500 days of war. The plot thickens, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, no labels. No labels. It's a name of a bipartisan group plotting an independent presidential campaign is claiming that a new poll commissioned by Democratic and Republican strategists determined to stop them actually bolsters their case. A No Labels response to the survey, which shows a moderate third-party candidate at roughly 20% in a three-way race with President Biden and former President Trump, is another indication that the deep-pocketed group isn't going away anytime soon. Dritten Nesho, who's chief pollster at No Labels, said their poll validates our strategy and what we've been saying all along, that there's an unprecedented opening for the independent ticket, a lot of room to grow, and a viable path to victory. It's a real insurance strategy given the weakness of and dissatisfaction with the major party candidates. Now, No Labels is giving every indication that their leaders are dead set on launching a third-party campaign, with West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin scheduled to headline a No Labels town hall in New Hampshire in just a couple of days. I think that's on the 17th. Another group named Alarmed, that's a collection of former Republican and Democratic lawmakers and top party strategists, are forming a new group led by former House Democratic leader Dick Gephardt, to stop them. But first, the strategists wanted their own data and commissioned a poll that included 2,200 likely national voters and 500 voters in seven swing states. Joe Trippi, a veteran Democratic strategist, said when the poll came back, it confirmed our worst fears. It sped up the decision to form a committee and start doing what we can to make clear the danger of what No Labels represents. Whether it's 38 or 43%, the diehard Trump vote isn't going anywhere, Trippi added, but there will not be a No Labels president. There will be a No Labels spoiler. Oh, excuse me. There will be a No Labels spoiler if they go through with their plan. Greg Schneiders, whose firm Prime Group conducted the poll, said a third-party candidacy is very, very, very likely to elect Trump. Without a third-party candidate, Biden leads Trump 52 to 48%, according to the poll. With one, Trump leads Biden 40 to 39%. The independent takes the remaining 21%. Those numbers are roughly the same in swing states, with the independent candidate capturing 18% in Michigan and 28% in Arizona. Now, the prospect that No Labels will nominate a candidate at their April convention and gain ballot access across the country is causing an increasing amount of alarm, and particularly the Democratic Party. Hawaii Senator Brian Schatz says, I think it's worth freaking out about because I think this election is likely to be close. And even if these idiots only get 3%, this is him, that could be 3% that throws the Electoral College in the wrong direction. The centrist group Third Way, along with the progressive organization Move On, will brief Senate Democratic chiefs of staff on July 27th on the risks they believe a third-party candidacy poses. Manchin, who played footsie with Iowa voters in May, told CNN yesterday, "I haven't ruled out anything." FBI Director Christopher Wray went toe-to-toe with his fiercest critics in Congress yesterday, testifying before a Republican-led House Judiciary Committee that's accused his agency of weaponizing law enforcement. Judiciary Committee Chair Jim Jordan unveiled a detailed roadmap for using the budget to target federal law enforcement policies that are reviled by his fellow conservatives. On alleged weaponization, Ray, a registered Republican appointed by Trump, told the committee, "The idea that I'm biased against conservatives seems somewhat insane to me, given my own personal background." On the Hunter Biden probe, he said Ray refused to comment on the ongoing investigation, but pushed back on assertions by Matt Gaetz that he was suspiciously uncurious about alleged wrongdoing by the Bidens. He said the FBI has no interest in protecting anyone politically. And on Trump's indictment, Ray again declined to speak in detail about the investigation into the former president's handling of classified documents at Mar-a-Lago, but offered this veiled criticism. "In my experience, ballrooms, bathrooms, and bedrooms are not skiffs." He said that in reference to facilities known as sensitive compartmented information facilities. Well, in the same vein, the president is enjoying a good week, both at home and abroad. Some say could shape his legacy and re-election hopes far beyond the partisan squabbles that consume Washington on a day-to-day basis. While his potential Republican rivals duke it out in Iowa, Biden is busy trying to harness the power of incumbency. June CPI inflation dramatically plunged from its peak, suggesting the nearing the end of a crisis that dragged Biden approval rating down and gave Republicans ammo for nearly 2 years. Report also showed that wage growth was outpacing inflation for the first time since March 2021, meaning Americans may actually start to notice rising purchasing power. Go figure. Now, that kind of shift in perception could do wonders for Biden's political fortunes, given the persistent disconnect between experts' views on the economy and the generally negative sentiment expressed by American voters. Lyle Brainard, who's Biden's director of National Economic Council, said today that the U.S. has both the lowest inflation rate and the strongest pandemic recovery among all G7 nations, adding the economy's defying prediction that inflation would not fall absent significant job destruction. Now, at the NATO summit in Lithuania, Biden booked two other wins, paving the way for Sweden to join the alliance and finding a consensus on new security guarantees for Ukraine. As we know, Turkey shocked the world by lifting its veto on Sweden's membership, a signature moment in Biden's pledge to strengthen NATO, and certainly a big blow to Vladimir Putin. Zelensky effusively praised Biden after their meeting, while the president told reporters that the NATO summit had accomplished every goal as he departed for the final stop on his current trip to Helsinki. Biden now in Finland can enjoy a long summer's night, but back home, his approval rating remains near the lowest of his presidency, with no shortage of negative scrutiny to, well, dampen an otherwise exceptional week. A bipartisan push has emerged in Congress to block Biden's plan to send cluster munitions to Ukraine, citing humanitarian concerns about a weapon that more than 120 countries have banned. And the New York Times' Maureen Dowd skewered the president in a widely read column on Sunday about his refusal to acknowledge his seventh grandchild, after Hunter Biden, his son, settled a child support case last month that began as a paternity dispute. And last today, we know NATO countries have been promising forever to spend more money on defense. In 2006, the NATO defense ministers adopted a vague guideline suggesting that every NATO country spend 2% of its annual economic output, GDP, on the military. At the time, most NATO members spent far less, and little changed right after the announcement. In 2014, worried by Russia's annexation of Ukraine's Crimea Peninsula, NATO's heads of state formalized the 2% benchmark and urged countries to move toward it within the next decade. Still, most countries have failed to meet it. Wealthy countries, in particular Germany, Denmark, the Netherlands, as well as Japan, seem to be free riders, able to spend more on their social safety nets while the U.S. protected them. But today, the situation really does look to be changing. Russia's invasion of Ukraine last February has apparently led to a new willingness for countries to pay for their own defense. For one, Germany appears likely to meet the 2% threshold next year. French President Emmanuel Macron has promised to lift military spending by more than a third this decade. Other countries are also spending more. The arguments for more military spending involve both fairness and democracy. Why should richer NATO countries like Germany be less willing to pay for defense than Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Greece, and Poland, all of which have hit the 2% target? Well, on one side are Russia and China. On the other, U.S., Canada, Japan, Australia, and, well, much of Europe. Democracy will be much more likely to prevail if countries share the burdens of military spending. Japan's leaders seem to agree with this idea. Historically, they spend only about 1% of GDP on the military, mainly a legacy of its post-World War II desire to avoid belligerence, as was also the case for Germany. But starting in 2012, former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe began pushing for a new approach, one that he argued was more fitting for modern times. Initially, the Japanese public was skeptical. In 2015, people actually took to the streets to protest a law that allowed Japanese troops to participate in some combat missions, primarily with the U.S. Today, people seem more supportive of that. Japan's current prime minister, Fumio Kishida, plans to raise defense spending gradually to 2% of GDP, and the public reaction has been, well, remarkably upbeat. Perhaps the new aggressiveness of China and nuclear tests by North Korea help explain that shift. Of course, there are trade-offs. The additional money that countries spend on defense is money they can't spend on roads, childcare, cancer research, refugee resettlement, parks, clean energy, you name it. In fact, one reason Macron has insisted on raising France's retirement age, despite widespread and violent protests there, analysts believe, is a need to leave more money on the table for the military. But the situation over the past few decades feels unsustainable. Some of the world's richest countries were able to spend so much in social programs, partly because another country, the U.S., was paying for their defense. Well, those other countries, sensing a more threatening world, are now once again promising to pull their weight. They just need to follow through this time around. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. No show tomorrow. Instead, we'll be playing a rerun. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the morning. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.